So it's sort of fitting to talk about the topological vertex and our understanding, you know, how we sort of use the relative stable maps to understand the topological vertex after the previous talk, and there seems to be more talks coming. My talk, so I will try to concentrate on the geometric understanding of the topological vertex, its gluing formula, and why it in the end gives us the Gromov weighting invariance of Torre Calabi-Yau. And I won't be able to say anything about the transignment theory, which I was still struggling to try to find the, you know, understand myself. And I will try to stay away from many of the technical or explicit analytic expression. I will basically try to stay in the topological setting. So the plan is that, you know, I will briefly give you what my understanding of the topological vertex theory in terms of the open string, and then start with a very simple example and try to convince you why relative stable maps is in certain case should be a right object in replacement of the open stable map or open strings, you know, with boundary in the special Lagrangian. And then we will show you that how we're going to go and use the stable relative stable map, our definition of the topological vertex, and prove all the formula or redo the whole theory. So well, there's two group of names I have to mention. So first, this is a joint work with Melissa Liu, C.C. Liu, and Kaifeng Liu, and Jen Zhou, and myself. And of course, this is after the work of A.K.M. So, what is the topological vertex? So we look at a Torre Calabi-Yau threefold. And the example I will do is the one is the OP2 minus 3, the total space over OP2, and the other case is the O minus 1. I will just try to draw, you know, this diagram associated to this case. And all of this has a C3 acting on it. But because these are Calabi-Yau, and of the C3, you know, this, C star 3. And of this, there's this C star 2, a subgroup that preserves, leaves the three form, right? I mean, this is a Calabi-Yau, that's this three holomorphic form, leave this invariant fixed. And that subgroup will play a very important role in the discussion of this. Given a Torre Calabi-Yau threefold, in particular given these two cases, and we can just look at the fixed point of this Calabi-Yau, you know, fixed point of this action within this Calabi-Yau, and also we can look at, I mean, then we trace those invariant P1 connecting the fixed point. And of these two examples, we will have this sort of famous diagram. So one is the triangle. There are three P1 sitting inside the P2 with three fixed points, but then we also have three lines going straight up, which is lies in the invariant fiber. So these are the open one, and I have three P1 here. And of this case, I have this picture, so I have two line up, and I have two line up, and I have a P1. Okay, so this is the graph. And once I have the, so the next thing is we want to look at the Gromov-Witten invariant, right? So we want to go with the Gromov-Witten invariant of this variety. And if we look at, let me just draw very roughly what is the picture. The picture is that, you know, I have this here and I have this here. So I will use the color chalk to say, you know, I basically I'm just going to count the number of holomorphic maps. So the holomorphic map is going to be something. In this particular case, because the boundary is negative, so the curve has to lie entirely in P2, but it can be anywhere, right? It can go pretty far from this and this, but this has to be wrapped around the P1, maybe like this. Okay, we just want to count the number of this holomorphic curve, and then sum them up, and then get the Gromov-Witt invariance. Now, of course, I mean, we can do this, and if we just do this by hand, it would be basically almost impossible. But later, what we learn is that we can use, with the help of this localized principle of localization, basically that it says that essentially we don't need to look at all the maps. Right. I mean, we don't need to look at all the maps. What we need to look at is that the fixed point of this star. Let me put it this way. You know, this action, this C star square is going to act on the total space. It's going to act on the space of a stable map, and then the certain map within the modular space is going to be fixed by this, and the localization principle say that we can actually evaluate the Gromov-Witt invariance by looking at the geometry and, you know, the certain geometry associated to this fixed map that are fixed. And the principle of localizing, well, the geometry basically means that all we need to look at is look at those maps that are very close to these three lines. Okay, so in other words, let me draw this. So it will be something like a very, very close curve here, very close to these three. Maybe I draw this one. And then near here, I can have some high genus going on, okay, many things going on. But it's very close to this point. Okay, and the map around here is very close to the map, which z goes to z to the power some a, you know, with certain variable. Okay, so of course, you know, if it's going to be exact, then it is fixed. But these are the map which is close to the stable map that are fixed by this. I mean, I can draw a similar picture over here. You know, you can have this. You have high genus here, but you know, all this is going to concentrate here. So the next thing is what this group of people, you know, the Bafa and his collaborator, then inserting special Lagrangian submanifold. What you do with this is that once you start with this, and you keep in mind that now to understand the Gromov-Witt invariance, we only need to look at understand this map. You know, away from the fixed point, I mean, this three fixed point is very close to those very special map of this. And there are a lot of geometry happening near this. What they did is they inserted some special Lagrangian submanifold here. And I just put it here, okay. So they put some special Lagrangian submanifold, if I put this L1, L2, and L3. Now, these are special Lagrangian submanifold. Now these are, I mean, keep in mind, these are three-dimensional inside the total space, the Calabi-Yau, and these are real three-dimensional. I will not worry about the special, I mean, I will not mention the special Lagrangian, but certain integrability condition. So you have to have a sort of a leap of faith and say, what actually happens if we magnify what happens here? What happens is that, you know, I have a P you know, this actually is a P1, right? So I have a P1 here. And over here, over this, I have the zero section. And over the zero section, it's going to be there is some real bundle here, so Li here. And now when I look at the map here, the map is going to, because it's not exactly fixed, it's very close to this one. But if you just sort of believe what happened is that the map actually, now this is three dimension, it doesn't happen usually, but just imagine it actually happened is that, you know, that this map is going to intersect with this special Lagrangian. So in other words, the map, let me just write as sigma, F is the map, stable map, sigma is the domain, intersect with this Li. It's just going to be some disjoint unit of S1. Okay, so, and possibly, you know, because of the shape, because of the A here in this particular case, you will have, you know, several windings. So it's winding number in this case actually equal to A in this particular case. Okay, so it doesn't happen. I mean, if you're an algebra geometer, you will ask why this happens. But, well, let's say, what if it does happen? Now, if it does happen, so the next thing, this is kind of a, just talk about story in the topological, the open string interpretation of the topological vertex theory is that, you know, all over this three yellow, I have this picture, and because the map, the curve actually goes through the yellow, but so by having a yellow, you know, the Li sitting there, it actually cut the Riemann surface, the pink Riemann surface into two pieces, or maybe separately, whatever it is, just, it's going to, it's like a co-dimension one sub-manifold, it's going to cut everything, goes through it into two, but even though this co-dimension, I mean, this three-dimension, it still does that. Now, once it does that, what one does is that we're going to split, okay, let me forget about this picture. And we're just going to split this picture into, we just, you know, cut this one. And then we're going to get this. Now, still, we're going to keep the L2 here. There's L2, but there's an identical copy. And that's copy here. I call this L1. L1, that's another copy, that's L3. Now, in this particular case, you can see I will just, you know, put another piece here, because just to make it symmetric. But in the end, because this, it does not do much thing, because when we do the global fitting invariance, when we do the closed global fitting invariance, the map does not go through this one, so there's no winding number here. So what happens in this case is that you will see that what we do is that we're going to assign a zero here, because there's no map going through this one. And for this one, in this particular case, if I say there's only one piece going through this, and I'm going to get a A associated to this end, and there's also A associated to this end. These are the winding number. And then probably you will have, maybe I put this A1 here. If I put this A1 here, and I put this A1 here. And you get maybe A2 associated here, maybe A3. But then, of course, you're asking why, when you have a Riemann surface going through it, we cut it, you only get a one circle. I mean, I say that's a disjoint unit. So if there are several circles, each circle, there's a winding number, you just put them together. So what in the end, instead of this one, you should really replace by a partition which is something like a D11, D1, L1. So certain, a sequence of integers. And similarly here, you get mu2, you get mu3. These are basically telling us, you know, how a Riemann surface is being cut, and when it's cut, how many of the boundary component and how many of the boundary component has the winding number D. So that's okay. Once you get to this picture, now they say, so they define the number of holomorphic map sigma d sigma goes to, let me just use the picture instead of a joint, so it's something like this, okay, and you have some L1, L2, L3 here, and you have a prescribed mu1, mu2, and mu3, and they say there is such a moduli space, there should be a virtual number, virtual counting of that moduli space associated to it, and they define this number to be C mu1, mu2, mu3. Okay, so they define this one, and now how to count the number of actual analytic, the goal is to count the stable map goes into this one, and we sort of agree that, you know, to count this one is basically to count those that's very close to the fixed loci, fixed map, and those fixed map can actually be cut into a map like this. And a map like this. And if we can count the number of this kind of a curve, with all possible choice of the partition, then the actual curve, so they argue the grouping formula, is that the number of the map from X to the Calabi-Yau actually can be equal to the sum of C mu1. So if I put mu1, mu2 here, is, you know, that's zero here, right? So I have to count be carefully. So I have to mu1, mu3, zero. That's the number. This with the open with the boundary any up in the yellow piece. Coming from this one, the number of open string, located near that topological vertex, multiplied by, just keep in mind, anytime you have this and this, they automatically grow. Don't ask why. Okay, they do grow. So the other one, so the contribution coming from this one will be zero, mu1 and mu3, and then the contribution coming from this will be mu1, mu2. Oh, I'm just screwing up all the index. Mu1, mu2, and 0, and C mu1, mu2, and 0, and then times C mu2, the other one is 3, 2, and 0. With some number, combinatoric number in here. So basically, it's going to be sum of mu. And of course, you want to make the genus also right. But in principle, that's the formula about the grouping formula. Now, of course, that story doesn't end here. You know, the next stage is that using the transimal theory, they can actually calculate, compute this, or possibly after switching, you know, using the representation basis. We use the representation basis. They can actually compute this one, use the transimal series to have an explicit formula, and then using this sum formula, they can actually get an explicit formula for the generative function of Gruen-Wittig within invariance of basically all local Calabi-Yau. Okay. So for this talk, I just want to say, you know, what is our understanding of interpretation of this work up to that point, using, instead of using the Lagrangian, which Lagrangian open method, which mathematically is still sort of a challenging problem to define, so instead we use the relative stable map. Okay, so open string. Let me do one example, an easy example. This is the first example that was studied, and it's the other one. I sort of that's the O minus one direction with O minus one over P. And that's the first example, you know, that this relation between closed Gromov-Witten invariant and the Chen-Simon theory worked out by Gopakumar and Vafa. So in this case, let me just be very, very slightly more precise. You know, what we do is we if you take Z as the variable of the P1 subtract infinite, then it becomes complex, and I just pick a Z. And then over P1 cross over this complex line, you know, the line model is just straightforward, you know, trivial line model. So I pick, so this becomes C direct sum C over this, right? I mean, this space over this is just C. And if I choose U and V as the two variable of this one, so what it turned out is that our look at, let me just draw that. This is the P1, and take out the points that's the complex line, and I have Z equal to zero here. So I take the BR equal to all the Z which is less than equal to R. So I'm just going to have a disk. And then I take the LR, so this is going to be the Lagrangian, which actually equal to U equal to Z bar V bar. So over each this one, I have a C2 fiber sitting over this. And inside this, I use this equation. I mean, these are two real equations, and I get a real, I have R2 bundle over this circle. And this is the special Lagrangian in this particular case. Now here's what happens. So now if you look at this particular case, if you look at F sigma holomorphic map goes to say I would say, let me be more precise. So I take this to be Z, okay, and goes to Z with boundary in LR. And I just want to make sure the map is sort of sitting over this side, okay. And that if that's the case, what can be proved, and it's very easy to show. Actually, that implies that the F sigma actually has to be in the zero section of O minus one. It's just that, like in the absolute case, because it's a negative degree, you know, the holomorphic map won't be able to go off the zero section. It's sitting inside. Now, once it's sitting inside, and then the boundary, you know, if the boundary hitting this part, it kind of a geometry is kind of difficult to deal with. But if you hit the real part, if it's, the map is entirely sitting in the disk, right, in the zero section disk, and the boundary has to winding around this cycle, and this is the gray circle, so it's very easy to see. So this is one, and second is like if I draw the picture, say this is the sigma. Okay, so this is the sigma, and I have a map F goes to, you know, this is a disk, right? This is the BR here. And the boundary goes to the boundary with certain winding number. What happens is that I can actually find this. Each of the boundary, I can find another disk and I mapped, this F is going from this to this side. And this disk is being mapped to the other end. And the total thing is the P1. Okay, so each of these is going to map to this one, and this disk, right? So I have an end point here. And each of these maps is actually given by Z goes to Z to the power BI. You choose the right coordinate. So in other words, it is a map which maps the boundary to this boundary, to this gray circle, and it's totally with this point, the only ramification point over that point. And more than that, the F here plus all this Fi, this say D1, D2, actually coincide along the boundary, and you can cap this boundary. You put this circle here, and this Fi actually extend the map to analytic map. It's just complex analysis. I mean, it just happened. When I was working on this, I was teaching complex analysis, so I know enough about this. I can do that. I mean, it's just refraction principle. Nothing more. The simple example tells you a lot what it happens, what it says. If I take the modular space, genus G and mu with say Z LR, these are this open string, right? So what this procedure gives us, it gives us a map goes to mg mu with p1 relative to infinite. Once you cap on this becomes a relatively stable map. It is a closed domain with mark points, and at each mark point is mapped to this point and with the specified ramification given by the winding number here. Whatever the winding number here, you have exactly the same ramification there. So you get actually a map. And you can actually see that if I call this CR, you can actually see the and now you play this game. You let this fix and you let R sort of move, become still the circle move and move closer and closer to this one. And what you will see is that when you expand the circle, you still have this map and the image becomes bigger and bigger. And eventually, if you take the limit, when R goes to infinite, if you look at the image, this actually becomes the modular space of the regular relative stable map. I have half more. So now I have to say about the relative stable map. Let me put it here and then continue. So the first thing I want to say is what I call the regular relative stable map. So here I pick a variety. So this is a general variety. Say, let's say this is X here, and I pick a divisor, which is a smooth divisor here. And relative stable map is going to be a curve. I'm just drawing the connect, but you can do the non-necessary connect one. With some mark points here, you can also put some other mark point, which is ordinary, but these are the special mark points. And I have to have a map here. And what happens is that the image becomes a curve. It's a holomorphic. It's a holomorphic map. If I just draw the image here, now there's a multi ramification involved with D1, D2, and what it says is that if you take a neighborhood and if you put it some kind of a disk, then this map, and along this you can put say a W, a normal coordinate. I'm just doing an analytic category. You're doing the normal coordinate variable, and you choose another variable, and this map actually can be written as z goes to w equal to z to the power d1. You know, that's certain ramification. But everything else is fine. So the curve is going to map to here. It only, the only place where the image intersects d is from the image of these points, and these points has ramification over here. So these are the relative stable map I call regular. But now, of course, you know, if you do the modular space, this object of this kind is not going to be compact, because if you imagine if you deform the such kind of a map, somehow it's possible when, you know, you can have a smooth curve, and when you do the limit, you know, you may break out some component, and that component, you know, can turn out sitting entirely inside this one, and this is no longer called regular. Right? So the way to work out this is that, so that the general is the relative stable map. Okay, I say relative map is, I have to find a way to accommodate. I don't want the component to be mapped into this. In algebraic geometry, we have to do the blow up or normal cone, whatever you call it. So what, in the end, what we're going to do is we're going to take some, so this is the projective bundle of all a 1D direction with the normal bundle of D inside X. Okay, so I have a D, I have X, I have a normal bundle, which is a bundle over D, and a direction with D, so that's a rank 2 bundle, and a projective value along each fiber, so this becomes a P1 bundle over D, with two sections. So I'm just going to put one delta here, one delta here, and so this is still the X. Okay, I just glue them and make them normal crossing. Okay, so I put N of them, and I call this X. And now, what is the relative stable map? That's what relative map. All I need to do is just do like this. Let me just draw you out a picture. Maybe something like this. You know, it's a chain of curve with all of these are nodal points. And when I do the map, I want to make sure that the image is going to be look like this. No, it's two component, and I still have D1 here, so I'm still going to have D1 D2 ramification. It has to have the right ramification. Okay, that's and here it all. I mean, we're not allowed to have any component sitting inside the singular part. But what about the ramification here? Well, it's free, but it's not entirely free. So the ramification coming from this component has to match the ramification from this. Okay, and same as this. So this has to be same as this, this has to be same as this. So that's the relative map. And now there's a little bit more catch, that is quite interesting, is that this one has a C star action, right? You know, this is a P1 bundle. I mean, you just have a C star dilate the O globally. You have a C star action on here, which is fixed this section. So the C star action actually acting on the whole piece, but actually only on this one piece, and which is identity here. But then I have the second piece of C star. And so in other words, because I have n rule variety, one stack onto the other, actually I have C star n acting on this. This N is exactly the number of, I mean, each C star is acting on this, fixing the two sections. So that's, and now the equivalence, the number 3, is the equivalence. I would say F, which is X goes to, so sigma goes to X, I say it's equivalent to F prime, which is sigma prime, goes to X and prime. I have two stable map. I have two relative map of this kind, and maybe of different length. But I say these two points are equivalent if I have an isomorphism. Okay, let me say isomorphism, say alpha, and I have another sigma. Now the sigma is no longer identity. Usually, if you do the absolute global fitting value, put identity here. But you say this is going to be one of these allow this occurrence coming from the group action, and I want this to be commute. So I say, okay, I'm gonna put it this way. F is equivalent to F prime, by definition is this. And then number four, I mean, once you have the equivalence relation, you can talk about automorphism F. Automorphism of F is it's the set of all equivalent relations of F with itself. Okay? And you know, stable if and only if automorphism F is finite. Okay. And actually by this I actually yeah. And N has to be equal to N prime, yes. Now that's one attribute it would be quite important. Let me put it here, automorphism. So F stable automorphism of F is less than infinite. Now number five, I want that relates to the localization we're going to do is that now in the case where Z equal to P1, that seems to be the case, you know, the easiest case. And that P1 itself has S1 action, right? Now you can deal with the moduli space. Let me use more space. Now the one number five is if I let X to be P1 and the divisor to be the infinite. Now this one has S1 action here. Now of course, I mean, if I pick a G, if I pick a partition, I can talk about the relative, the module of relative stable map. It becomes a compact. Okay, it becomes compact and it's a Hausdorff space. It basically is going to be, if you have a P1 here, you're going to all this map going here and with proper ramification. But if somehow there's certain component entire map to this one, I have to stack a P1 onto it and put some here, and the chain map goes up. Right? Now, but in any case, if I have an action on this one, I definitely will have an action here. Now the question is, what are the fixed points? Okay, now that's, so there are two kinds. One is, let me just draw the picture here. The one is that I have a P1, and maybe another component here which has a high genus and mapped here, right? So this is the P1. And here map is Z goes to Z D1, and this one is Z goes to Z D2. You know, the usual map that has to be, you know, sitting inside the map that's fixed by the S1, and all of this is just going to be a point. Okay, so this is one of the kind of one. These I call regular. You know, these are the regular relative stable map, and these are also fixed. These are fixed by the S1 action. But there are the others. What are the others? So for instance, I can have, maybe I have one less genus. I have two genus members. So one genus all of a sudden pop up to this point. So I have this one. Then I will have some genus one curve up here. Now, what happens is that I have this regular P1, right? And this is going to map to points here, and this is just like these two points. But that one, of course, I mean, I can, in the abstract, I just map the whole thing to this point. But that's not allowed in our situation. You know, these are not the relative stable map. So to accommodate, you know, a component map to a point, I have to add a component on top of this. I have to add another P1. Actually, this is delta, but in this case, delta is just the P1. Now, this is just going to be, actually, this here is any map. But then, well, I have to have a D1 here. But But now something is wrong here, right? I mean, this here and there's nothing here. So I have to add a sort of dummy factor. So this is going to be a really the wrong, the standard map. And this is D2. This, I put this one simply because I have to accommodate this one. I have to raise the mark point to this one, and then I just insert this, you know, this kind of a standard map, C2, D2. But the point is that, I mean, I don't have time to go. Actually, you can just check that these are also a fixed point. Why? I mean, of course, you know, if you look at the S1 action, the induced S1 action will have equally acting on both of these. So if this is arbitrary map, then it's certainly going to move that map. But then if you look at the equivalence relation allow us to cancel out any movement, any action coming from the C star. And in this particular case, the C star is just the direction along that copy. So whatever the action here, I can be bring it back or cancel out by this one. Just exactly because of this relation, these are also fixed points. So you see, the fixed point of this module space can be rather, you know, relatively nice, but there are contain also other maps that's rather complicated. Okay, that's enough about the relative stable map. Oh. I have to go. So what is the other end we want to continue, right? We want to continue here, and the number which I call, what is it, mu1, mu2, mu3, actually is the, you know, it's the virtual number of this modular space. Right, this one. And because of this relation, what we hope is that we can come up with some obstruction bundle over the modular space, over this modular space, mu p 1 infinite, okay, and then what we want to say is we want to prove, then check that mu 1, mu 2, mu 3, which is, I mean, implicitly defined by the open Gromov-Witten invariant or the open string, but actually it's computed using the transaminal theory, should be the integration of mg mu p 1 infinite, you take a virtual cycle, and then you take the Euler class of this bundle. So, I mean, the hope is this. And this is the route, you know, Song and I did, and also Sheldon Katz and Liu, they around the same time, actually a few days ahead of us, is they similar idea they also calculate. But at that point, the way is that, you know, if we want to do the localize, then we'll try to compute this number by using the local, we want to do localization. If we do localization on this, we have to study all this fixed point. And it's, of course, I mean, we feel it's almost impossible to deal with this. So we just look at, so instead, we do localization on the mg mu p1 infinite, but the regular S1. So we just kick out a lot of fixed point. We kick out all these fixed points. We look at the fixed point over there. We're only on this. And then plus a particular choice. When I say localization, I have to pick S1, which is sitting inside this, right? I have to pick S1 sitting inside with a particular choice of this one, we actually get this number is equal to that number. And of course, I mean, slightly later, you know, that it is discovered, it is argued that even this number, because it's coming from a transaminal theory, that's this dependence of framing. Okay, so because of, no, actually it's not this one, but that, yeah, because of the framing, no, I'm sorry. That's only, that only 1 mil here. That's only 1 mil. In this particular case, that's only 1 mil here. Not 3 lag yet. Then it's later discovered, you know, there's a framing involved here. Okay. So keep in mind, you know, we just did a cheated in a way. You know, instead, we just sort of pick the right fixed point and experiment with the weight. And somehow for the particular choice, you know, it actually coincides and, you know, we're happy. And then there's later discovered, you know, by physicists, you know, Wafer, and there's a framing here. Then if you put in the choice of the S1 here, that's also depend on the integer, they all actually coincide. So there's a framing here, and then there's this choice of C star square. So, and that actually becomes the same. But the point is that you only do the localization along the regular. Okay. So that's the, so this is certainly not satisfactory. So what it turned out is that much later, we discover later there's a topological definition of this number C mu F. Now this is not a topological because even though we take a compact space when we do the localize, we only pick part of the fixed point. Right? If we pick all the fixed points, we're going to actually calculate this and we have no idea what it is. So what happened is that actually the topological definition of this, what it actually it is that, so here is the simple way of seeing this. So here we look at M, G, mu, P1, infinite. And now instead, we have P1, infinite. This is a relative pair. We want to embed this one inside the total space of all F. We pick an F integer. That F will become the framing. Plus O minus 1 minus F over P1. And then that's the C2 sitting over the infinite. Okay. So here we have this, and that's the relative, I mean the relative, and here we have P1, but we have two bundles sitting here. One is O, one is F, one is the minus F minus 1, and we put this one to be the relative part. And I call this one to be Z, F, and I call this one, you know, the D. Now what turned out to be is that this pair is a relative Calabi-Yau. So in other words, the determinant of the cotangent bundle of, well, the cotangent bundle of Z, F, with D, you know, the log cotangent bundle actually is trivial. So this is a relative Calabi-Yau, and if we embed this one inside MG mu, so this I call ZF, that's D here. So first I embed, so this is a compact, right? This is compact inside this one, and then we work out the obstruction bundle of the pair. Basically, you know, modulate the deformation of P1. There is an obstruction to deform a map inside to a map which goes to ZFD. Right, I mean you have a map going to here, but I mean if you think of the map as going to P1, there's a theory about how it's going to deform. But if you think of this actually sitting inside the 3-4, that's another deformation theory, right? You have actual space and you measure that, you know, there's extra things, either positive or negative, but there is going to be an obstruction bundle out of this one, which is going over here, you know, some EF. Well, actually, no. I mean, you're going to have an obstruction, and that will going to be sitting over here. right? I mean, the abstraction to deformal element here inside a conceptually bigger modular space. So the abstraction bundle, it is an abstraction bundle class which is depending on the F over here. And what we can actually compute in this particular case, it is just simple calculation that C mu F actually exactly equal to the integration G mu P 1 infinite virtual class and Euler class of EF. So this is a topological statement, no longer rely on the localization. You can use the localization to compute it. And you can use different, whatever the weight you want to use. It always comes to the same answer. Okay. So that's the first, once you realize this, so the next definition is fairly straightforward. Okay, now, question? What is the? Now, this, for instance, okay, for one particular example, say, for instance, Z F equal to O minus 1 plus O minus, now this is not the relative, it's not the relative color BR, but in case that's this case, now, these two modular space are actually exactly the same, because all map going to P1 will be exactly going to, all map goes to this, will have to sit inside the zero set. The modular space is the same, but the deformation theory are different. Okay, so for instance, the virtual dimension is zero, but virtual dimension of this is not zero.
So does this EF come
from the deformation theory? By studying the deformation theory of that modular space. And if you pick different F, you pick different color BL 3-4, you get different vector bundle. And you do the same modular space, but you change the bundle. By changing the bundle, and you do this topological computation, the degree of that over against the virtual side, you get the group of Kumar Wafa number, all of this. So that's the topological definition. So the upshot is that instead of, you know, here somehow the idea is to rely on the weight of localization to recover the choice of frame. Here we just push the localization out, and we say the framing actually should be a topological, certain hidden geometric data out of the threefold. And that's this topological data. Now what is the, once you get to this, then the topological vertex can actually be defined very easily. Now, topological vertex via stable map, relative stable map. Now, so here's the topological vertex, right? So here is, say, there's this three leg which corresponds to 3P1. And we have some framing, right? We have some framing here. So we have, say, there's some F1, F2, some kind of a Lagrangian, but associated to some framing here. And then, of course, we have this mu1, mu2. But this we understand fairly well. These are the winding number and relative stable map. These are the ramification partition. So what we do is, given this data, we come up with a Calabi yaw. I mean, you can do the formal case, but all we need is we want only to look at the map which is close by this string. So we take a sort of analytic object. We take three tubes out of this. And inside this, we have, let me draw this as the pink. That's the 3P1. Okay, I have 3P1 sitting in the middle. Now, this is a threefold, right? I want a threefold. Now, if I have a P1 here, the normal bundle will be rank 2 bundle. And according to the hint coming from here, what we want is that we want the two normal bundle. So if this is F1, I want the two normal bundle, they all split, right? I want the normal bundle, this piece to be OF, and this piece to be all minus 1 minus s. So this will become a relative Calabi-Yau with respect to this n. And the same thing you do here. If you have, you put, say, all f3 here, another all minus 1 minus f3 here, and you have this. Well, globally you might have, but I mean locally you can always do that. I mean just to your neighbor. Okay, just take, you do this, and you call this is z, you call this is z f1, f2, f3. Okay, and with the three relative divisors here. Now, what do you do? Then you do the modular space, g mu, I mean mu is the partition, and you look at all the modular space of relative stable maps going into this with you know, relative to this has the partition with ramification given this. So you're doing z f1, well, let me just put f bar here and some d f bar. You take this modular space. You take this modular space, and because this is, now because this is smooth Calabi-Yau, right? I mean, this is smooth Calabi, even though it's analytic. So this modular space has a perfect obstruction theory. You can do whatever you want. I mean, well, you have the obstruction theory. You can define the virtual cycle. So you take this, and the next thing is one you want to define, say, mu1, mu2, mu3, f1, f2, f3. You know, this topological vertex associated to these three partitions and these three framing to be the number of integration over this one here and number one. Okay, you want to do this. But again, now there's a big trouble in this time again. You know, unlike in this case, this is a compact. Itself has a virtual cycle. And this one is not compact. So the difficulty. So the difficulty is that mg mu ZF, ZF is non-compact. So by using this definition, it doesn't make sense. So instead, what are we going to do is we're going to define this one to be the localization. But then if I do define localization, I have to depend on a subgroup, right? But let's just pick an S1 subgroup of this integration. So I'm going to m g mu, but I only do v f d f, you know, virtual that are lie in the you know, as a map, well, in the image into this. So I want to forget about all other maps. Okay, I only want to, if I look at the fixed point, there are maps only, you know, those maps that map entirely into the pink, three pink line, and there are certain maps. And I'm just going to sum over all the contribution using the obstruction theory of this one and summing over the contribution of this one. And of course, this is not, I'm just localizing of this, some virtual class. And you see, at this point, we bring in this to make the definition independent of localization. And once we get this, and we all of a sudden we find that we what we define still going to depend on the localization. And then we have to prove there's a technical lemma is that this one is independent of S1. So that's the, so we have to prove basically using certain some argument to say that even though by doing the localization, this actually a priori looks like depending on the choice of a subgroup, but in the end, this actually does not. okay? Because it does not, we can actually define as a number, and we define it to be this. Okay, let me put it this way, because the one without tilde is coming from the Trans-Simon theory. So let me just say one more word. So that's the definition. And property. So for instance, what is the gluing formula? Now how we compute the Gromov weighting invariant of -3 goes to P1, not P2, right? So we have this picture. And according to this, what we should do is we just pick, you know, a sort of small tube along this thing. Now these are open, right? But this one, because this is a P1, now I'm just going to say, you know, the frame, the choice of framing actually is very nicely fitting into the degeneration formula. This is a, we know this is a curve which is a whatever. I mean it's a what is this? I mean that's O minus one plus O minus one, right? Oh no. I can't do algebraic geometry, I'm sorry. It's O minus 3, then it's going to be O minus 3. Right? Someone tell me. O 1, yeah, okay, good. I don't have to think. So what you do next is you want to break that P1 into two pieces, but when you break that one into two pieces, you have to decide how you're going to choose the normal bundle here, right? And there are many different ways to make it work. You know, if you put F here, then you have to get a minus one minus F, but then the total is minus three, so you probably have to get a minus three minus F. But then this one will be minus 1 minus minus 3 plus 3 plus f. So the choice of breaking a P1, degenerate a P1 into a 2P1 which intersect normally and make the 3-4 go along, you have only one choice. I mean, you have to make choice about the normal bundle, and you have the choice is depending on one parameter, and that's the framing. So that's why in the summation of the topological vertex, you know, if you're familiar with this, once you have this, when you cut it, you have to fix the three framing, and then you're summing over all the partition. But the choice of three framing in this is exactly the choice of degenerate this threefold into a threefold which has this piece, and then, you know, once you have that picture, then there's this degeneration formula of I mean, how, you know, the general formula, a relative Gromov weighting invariant. I mean the Gromov formula. Okay, so the Gromov formula gives exactly the Gromov formula of the topological vertex, and it explains exactly, you know, how the framing comes in and why you have to sum over all the partitions. So, and also the dependence of a framing, and if it's f minus one minus f compare with f plus one. Minus 1 minus f plus 1. So this one, you can just break it up, become 1 and f and 1, and then something here, and you compare this, you will get the cut and join equation. So that's, I mean, all the relation actually can come directly from, you know, the rewriting of the Gromov formula of the relative Gromov weighting invariance. All seems fine, except in the end, we define this number using the localization, and the localization, of course, is going to express in terms of the Hodge integral, and that's still a question, is this number going to coincide with the number coming from the Trans-Simon theorem? You know, the two-leg case is already worked out. It's by Liu, and Zhou. And for the three-leg case, I mean, we did some expert computing by the algorithm, and for whatever we've done, it all works fine. But we haven't, I mean, we're still working on this. There's a hope that we had some idea, but we haven't finished that part yet. You know, it would be wonderful if we can, and we do believe that these are the same. It just takes time. Thank you.